Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Tonight's program is going to be a little different in that it was inspired by and is going to be a public extension of a private conversation I, and I'm sure many others, have been engaging in since the first wave of Hollywood harassment stories triggered a tsunami of revelations of decades-long abuses of power in virtually every industry and every area of life we engage in. My goal is not to rehash any of the salacious details the media has been sharing, or to negate any of the pain and suffering of the courageous souls who, in the hope of exposing and changing a deeply disempowering dynamic that's been haunting humanity for eons, have bravely shared their stories. Rather, what I want to do tonight is to dive a little deeper in pursuit of an alternate perspective that might just offer some clues as to why abuse happens, why so much that has been hidden is emerging now, and whether there is an opportunity in front of us for healing. My guest is visionary speaker, author, teacher, and telepathic communicator, Susie Miller, whose finely honed abilities to read energy and see and communicate with the unseen have given birth to two pioneering and perception-shifting programs, Awesomeism and the Journey Back to Love, that have transformed the lives of thousands of parents, women, and children worldwide. Susie Miller, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Susie, for those who might not be familiar with you and your work, I'd like to start by establishing that throughout your career, you've collaborated with professionals in the fields of psychology, social work, education, science, medicine, quantum physics, and healing, all of whom can attest to the remarkable gifts that you have, and that your work has largely focused on guiding others to develop their own multidimensional awareness and learn to see, feel, hear, and experience beyond this generally accepted reality, as you so remarkably demonstrate. So, having said that and made that clear, when you told me in October 2016 that you had heard with a multidimensional ear, I'm guessing, just around that time that the door to the underworld is closed, what did you make of that in relation to what is happening today?
Yeah, so when I heard that back in October of 2016, it was very clear to me that what was kind of hidden within our collective subconscious or our collective unconscious we could no longer hide in the collective unconscious or the collective subconscious. So when I heard that the underworld was closed, I was assuming that the subconscious and unconscious was going to start leaking to the surface in one way or another and kind of bring to the surface some of the things that we hold as collective shame and or collective guilt, those kinds of things.
Well, abuse is an old, old, old story. I mean, people in powerful positions abusing their power, you know, it's been around for millennia. Only this time, for the first time, I think, it seems that society en masse is listening. Now, I could say that one reason for that is that thanks to the internet, we now have access to a platform that cannot be controlled. Once word is out, it is everywhere. But you say there's another reason, and that is that this underworld closing, in a sense, that you've just described, the collective consciousness is ready finally to face the painful conversations that we've long been avoiding. I mean, do you think we're ready for this?
I think they absolutely are ready, because that's exactly what's happening. You know, like you said, everybody is having this conversation now. And so whether they're having it from the perspective of being a quote-unquote victim and finally being able to say that this is something that has happened to them, or whether they are able to have the conversation from a point of view that, you know, the shame and guilt that they might have felt as an individual is now able to be, you know, recognized as not just a hidden individual experience, but a collective experience. This is a global, you know, experience. So for whatever, at whatever place people are able to have this conversation, they're definitely having it. And from my vantage point, that's an amazing thing, because anytime you take something that is perceived as individual, you know, one of the things that keeps shame and guilt, one of the things that keeps it suppressed and pushed under is the fact that everybody thinks it's just them. Everybody thinks it belongs to them and somehow they were wrong. But when you have a mass of information coming out like this all at the same time, it does bubble something up from the unconscious. And yeah, I think the conversation is definitely ready to be had.
You know, I use the word ousted in the title for this week's program. And, you know, I did that deliberately because ousted is a word that we've been hearing a lot lately, generally in relation to those that have been abusing their power over others. But if you think about the meaning of the word ousted, you know, it's kind of pushing someone off of a point that they're on, you know, from a position. And what you like to do is shift people's perceptions. So in a sense, you like to oust people, you know, from their entrenched views. You know, right now, as you say, we've, you know, all this stuff is coming to the surface. We've all got secrets. We all have hidden hurts and wounds. Do you think that we can really this time, I mean, we may be listening, but do you think we have what it takes to take advantage of the opportunity that you say is now open before us?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like to live in a world where potentials and possibilities exist, right? So I couldn't say anything other than yes, I think we're absolutely ready. But I also think that in order to take full advantage of what's happening right now, that it's really not enough to simply just bring this information to the surface and point a finger, right? And I'm by no means saying that, you know, individuals who have abused power in some of the ways that we've been hearing about, I mean, there needs to be some means of really coming into awareness for both the person who has been quote unquote victimized and the person who is doing the victimizing, so to speak. So there's awareness to be had on both sides, right? There's new information and new awareness to be had on both sides. But I think that if to really take advantage of what you're talking about, Sandy, and with all of this coming up, we do have to really take a nice deep look at our own experiences. You know, where have we victimized ourselves? Where have we held shame and guilt that no longer serve us? How can we let that go at this point? You know, I think that there's a lot of different facets here where we can begin to shift a perceptual reality, because to have this come up, and if it was left that it all comes to the surface and there are just all of these individuals who have quote unquote been victimized, then I think we're really missing the point. I think that the opportunity here is really to go to a place of integration, to a place of healing, to a place of empowerment, both for men and for women.
Well, I'd like to come back to that a little bit later in the show. What I'd like to address right now is why abuse happens. What is really behind it? I mean, we all know that, you know, sexual abuse isn't really about sex. It's about power. It's somebody who feels powerless and constantly has a need to exert that power or, you know, demonstrate it to themselves. But you have more to say on that subject. So why don't you take the field and tell us your view of what is behind abuse?
Yeah, so I kind of want to look at this from a couple different levels and perceptions. And one of those perceptions is the fact that, number one, like you said, you know, sexual abuse is not about sex. It's not about intimacy. It's not about anything along those lines. It's really about control. And anybody who seeks to control, for whatever reason, we all have little dynamics of control within us. And we seek control in order to feel safe. We seek that kind of experience in order to feel powerful, like you say, when we haven't been empowered. And so I think the first thing to, and again, I'm not justifying any actions here by any stretch, but I do think it's worth pointing out that anybody who victimizes or is considered a perpetrator in that way, they have been victimized. I mean, it's like I really have a hard time believing that somebody just simply acts in that way because they're good, upstanding people, you know, good, loving people. It just doesn't go hand in hand. And when you kind of go back into the histories of both individuals who have been victimized and individuals who are the victimizer, if you kind of dig into their history a little bit, you'll find out pretty darn quickly that there was some energy that set that up. There was some energy that really created a need to be controlling. And, you know, you look at the kind of jobs that these kinds of individuals that go into. I mean, they have very powerful, authoritative kinds of jobs. They're put in a place of quote-unquote power, and then they misuse that power, as you said at the beginning.
Susie, I'm just going to hold you there. We do need to go to a break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest is visionary speaker, author, teacher, and multidimensional seer, Susie Miller. And we're talking about abuse, sexual and otherwise, why it happens, what's behind it, what we can learn from it, and most of all, how we can heal it. After the break, we'll hear more from Susie about why abuse happens, what is really behind it. We'll be back in a few moments.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Susie Miller, prior to the break, you were telling us about how if one looks into the history of many perpetrators, we will often find, in fact, invariably find, that there's been abuse in their history. That opens up another part of the conversation about, you know, who we are as a society, you know, that these patterns that we inflict them on children. And some people have to deal with abuse from the moment they're born.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that I want to go to this other place of this conversation as far as, you know, you asked why abuse happens and those kinds of things. And, you know, we can look at the, you know, are we being very humane? You know, are we being very humane humans or not? And, you know, we can look at the degree of abuse that goes on and say, you know, yeah, no, we haven't figured out how to be maybe as loving as a humanity as one would wish. But the other piece of that that I think is really important is when you take a collective society or a collective humanity, and if you want to control that collective humanity, then the best ways to control that collective humanity is by kind of depressing or suppressing innocence. You know, innocence is a very powerful energy. It's a beautiful energy. Anybody just has to look at a newborn baby to feel, you know, the clarity, that what I would call true power, that innocence is available in those eyes or in that experience. So you start suppressing that kind of innocence, or you start suppressing what I would call the female energy, and this is regardless of whether that female energy is in a female body or in a male body, but you start suppressing intuition, and you start suppressing the ability to trust oneself, and you've got control, right? So, you know, you start suppressing innocence, you start suppressing that feminine intuitive awareness, and you start suppressing something as powerful as sexual, sensual energy. And it kind of creates a society that lacks creativity, lacks maybe empowerment, lacks all kinds of things. And so one of the beautiful things about having all of this information come to the surface now is, like I say, if we can get past the victimization and we can really start building back our innocence, building back that intuitive awareness, building back that life force, creative energy, that sensuality, from a more authentic place. I mean, we really have the opportunity of developing now into a humanity that actually does end up supporting and loving and encouraging the innocents, the children, the next generations. But we've got to take a good hard look at that, and we've got to really embrace this as an opportunity if we're going to if we're going to actually get past what it has been in the past and offer something different to our next generations.
You've spent your entire career working with children. You know, former speech language pathologist, and then you were working with, you know, the autistic community, still do. You've learned a great deal about children, and you've often said that the first 7 years of life provide the imprinting within us for how we relate to sex, lies, love, life, and everything in between. Can you, you know, speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think just natural developmental, you know, the developmental processes that we all go through, those first 7 years of life, you can look this up anywhere, and they'll talk about those first 7 years being really conducive to building awarenesses with us. We get imprinted by what our parents believe and what that generation believes. I've also heard it said often and really like this kind of vantage point that, you know, anytime we give birth to a child, whatever we haven't cleared as an individual ourselves, whatever we haven't worked through in our own patterning, we pass that on to the next generation so that that generation hopefully will clear that particular pattern. And so, you know, so when we look at energy getting cleared or we look at patterns getting cleared, I think it's too small of a focus to look at one individual trying to clear a particular pattern. Each individual is attempting to clear a lineage pattern. So if you have abuse, sexual abuse or any other kinds of abuse in your family lineage, each lineage will pass that down. They'll imprint that into the child in one way or another. And like I said, if the parent hasn't been able to get past that and integrate and heal those experiences, then it'll get passed down to the child. It's another great reason why we have this, you know, we have this massive awareness right now. To me, that means we've got a massive population, a massive generational shift where everybody's saying, oh, we're going to do this differently now. This is where the buck stops here kind of thing.
Well, why now? Why is this all coming to the surface now?
I think it's coming now because as a collective humanity, we have the opportunity to actually evolve in ways that we've not been able to evolve before. I think, like you said, we've been kind of inhumane humans up to this point, and we're learning through all kinds of different means right now that we can choose again. We can choose something differently. And so if we have all of these, I kind of look at it, if I look at it through those energetic eyes, you've got all of this new information coming in. We've got information coming in that is informing us of what is possible beyond the limitations that we have held up to this point. And as that new information keeps coming in, it kind of bubbles up and boils up this information that no longer serves us. And as it no longer serves us and we become aware of it and we release collective guilt and shame, we have the opportunity to kind of really become, I guess the best way to say it, we actually human. We actually begin to become more divine humans than inhumane humans. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, I'm really interested. I am so glad that much of this has come to the surface because it has been bubbling away. You know, we've been, certainly England has had its fair share of scandals in the last decade of sexual abuse. And, you know, it seems to be rampant, and especially paedophilia. And I think it is time mm-hmm. for all of this to come to the surface and for us to, we have to find a way to almost dismantle, you know, the need for it. I'm sure that there are many, many people who perpetrate this kind of stuff who are completely unconscious. And if we can begin to dismantle it and show all these other perceptions, it might begin to weaken the, you know, the hold and the need in some people.
Right. Well, and I do believe that, I'm not saying that individuals who are perpetrators are unconscious of their actions. I mean, they're conscious of what they're doing
sure.
from the standpoint of, you know, playing out whatever they're playing out. And there's some part of them that kind of feels a little bit off about it in many cases. And sometimes, you know, it's just justified in one way or another. You know, we hear things like, well, I grew up at a time where that was okay, so that somehow becomes justification. But I think that the piece that is interesting to me, and again, looking at it energetically, I mean, having been myself in a lot of those kinds of same-sex situations around sexual abuse and things along those lines in my own lifetime and working with any number of other women who have been in similar situations, the other piece of this that I find fascinating, of course, I'm only talking about this through my lens, so take it for what it's worth, but a lot of the individuals that I see, either men or women, who have had any kind of abuse or suppression in one way or another that really got them to the place where they were really doubting who they are and what they are and all this other kind of, that same population has a tendency to be the population that seeks out broader aspects of reality. Those are the very individuals that kind of go looking for love in different places. You know, if whatever happened here was unloving in their experience, these are the individuals that kind of go looking for a much broader perspective of who they are. And so, you know, we can look at it from a couple different vantage points. These individuals may have come really interested in a trajectory that was going to kind of rise above the typical human condition and, you know, have them seeking maybe a level of unconditional love that just they didn't get exposed to in the situations that they found themselves in. So, you know, I just find it fascinating that you have a group of individuals who have had these experiences, and those experiences are the very thing that kind of move them out in the world and make them want to create a world really based on a more unconditional, loving condition. Right? So I understand the challenging parts of it. I've been there. I understand the quote unquote negative aspects of it. But again, if we're going to shift perceptions here, I always go back to something a mentor said to me a long time ago. And basically what he said is, what does this situation make you become? You know, not what is the situation, what is the issue, but what does it ask you to become? What direction does it push you in because that particular thing happened? And I think if we really look very clearly at that, I know when I look at it energetically, I see a bunch of women, a bunch of men, a bunch of children who are really ready to become something more than what humanity has offered to them thus far. And that's exciting to me.
That's very exciting. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Susie Miller, visionary speaker, author, and teacher, about abuse, why this topic is surfacing and being seen, heard, and felt in a way that society's never been willing to see, hear, feel, and listen to it before. We'll be back with more after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom,
Everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Susie Miller, in a conversation that you and I had about this some days ago, you said that the way we move through life and our experiences is dependent on the relationship between the masculine and feminine energies within us. Now, you did touch on this a little bit earlier, but would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, I think that so often we kind of consider that if we have a female body that we have, that there's only a female aspect, right, of us, male body, male aspect. But we both have both, you know, we all have both. And so I think that what happens very frequently in abuse is whether it's a masculine or feminine body that goes through that kind of situation. The aspect of the aspect that gets kind of dampened is usually the more feminine aspect. It's usually that more intuitive aspect is what gets kind of quote unquote crushed in that experience or dampened in that experience. And so if we both have masculine and if we all have masculine and feminine energy, there's kind of the loosely stated, let's say that the feminine aspect is that intuitive aspect of all of us, regardless of what the sex of the body is. And the masculine aspect is more of our capacity to take action and to move forward. And so you can imagine if we, through sexual abuse or any other kinds of abuse, you can imagine if we start to mistrust our intuition, that it makes it very challenging to then take steps to kind of enhance our humanity, right? Now we don't fully live our lives if our intuition or feminine aspects of self and our masculine aspects of self have not been integrated. And so you'll see this play out in all kinds of people's lives in all kinds of ways. Matter of fact, to one degree or another, I think that the masculine and feminine energy within everybody is pretty out of balance, right? And so when we start putting our attention more internally and start looking at the balance or the imbalance between the masculine and feminine energy, we can start to invite that energy within us into what like a dance. We invite that energy to dance. We invite the masculine energy to inform or kind of support, create a container for the feminine energy within us. And we invite the feminine energy within us or the intuition to kind of inform the masculine energy of how to actually create that container. So, you know, so I think that what also happens naturally and organically, especially in situations around abuse, is that it can make individuals kind of, let's say, look for love in all the wrong places, right? It can make individuals look externally for something, someone, some experience, some reality that will kind of make them feel like they can heal that wound or fill up that wound. But if we look at the masculine and feminine energy within us, and if we just work there, if we pay attention to that more than anything else, if we question that and be curious about that and notice, you know, even if we said to ourselves, well, what does my feminine energy feel like? What does it look like? You know, what color is it? What sensations do I have when I think about that? Same thing for my masculine energy. What does that look like? What does that feel like? And if we put those two energies, let's say, together in a space, you know, say we lock those two energies together in a sphere or some little space, and we just simply watch what our masculine and feminine energy does or if we just simply sense or notice, however we get information, you'll get a lot of information about what's working and what's not working within the masculine and feminine within you. You know, we don't have to go digging deep into our psychology to figure out how the masculine and feminine energy is dealing with each other, within ourselves, with each other. So, but as we put our attention there, and as that masculine and feminine energy start dancing together and enhancing each other, what we end up noticing is that then the outer landscape, that which is, you know, out and about, that which seems external to us, all of a sudden starts bringing representations of this beautiful internal dance that's taking place.
You know,
and I think that's a real way of healing.
I think this is something that we are seeing the beginning of in many of the youth, you know, the millennials. You've worked with children for many years, and children of all ages, and you know, from what I'm seeing of the millennials, is that they seem to have a different balance within themselves, a much more equitable balance between the masculine and feminine, to the point where some refuse to actually even be identified as either, you know, because, you know, they see themselves as a blend of both. And are you seeing that in the children that you're working with? And do you see that as evidence that we are evolving towards, you know, something more balanced?
More balanced, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see it in, I have four daughters, I see it in my own children and the way that they, you know, interact in, you know, all the dynamics of their life. But I think to also just put this out on the millennials, I mean, yes, they are demonstrating in many ways more of a balance, or let me say, maybe not more of a balance, but they're demonstrating more of a willingness to play with the masculine and the feminine within them. But I think that the piece that gets missed all the time is that it doesn't matter what generation you're from. You know, we all have masculine and feminine aspects, and depending on what generation we're from, you know, my parents' generation, their parents' generation, there were very fixed rules around what it meant to be quote unquote feminine, or to use that feminine energy, and how to use that feminine energy, and also what it meant to be masculine. And in those generations, I think it was swayed, you know, it's almost like the masculine energy had an identity and they were supposed to stay in that, you know, framework, even though it didn't work for them. And women had a certain framework as well, and it didn't work for them either. I mean, what really works is when we begin to allow this dance of the masculine and feminine within us. And then no matter who we meet in the outer landscape, whoever is standing in front of us, let's say, could be a child, it could be a grandparent, it could be a significant other or a partner, that individual may, or regardless of what the sex of the body is, that individual may be more in their masculine aspects or more in their feminine aspects in any given moment. And, you know, it's like there's a dance that's going on, masculine and feminine, within each of us. There's a dance that goes on between the masculine and feminine within two people standing in front of each other. And again, it has nothing to do with the sex of the body. And one of the things I've really been looking at more recently, especially when we're looking at, I've been looking at that more masculine energy too, and how it's been taught to be something, you know, just like the feminine energy has been taught to be something. So regardless of the sex of the body, we're all trying to find some balance right now between the masculine and the feminine. And the millennials are definitely kind of going, hey, what about this? You know, we can play this way. We can do it this way. But I think that, again, I'd really encourage people to go back inside themselves, and really start asking some questions about how the masculine and the feminine energy within them relates to each other. What plays out just because you put those two energies in the same space? And the more we do that, the more we can invite not just a dance, but an actual integration or an actual merging of those energies.
Do you, you say you're inviting people to do this, but, how do we do it? Do you have techniques, exercises, suggestions?
Yeah, having spent an awful lot of time with multidimensional sight, I have a tendency to go in that direction because a lot of times it's much easier to shift something when we do it from a multidimensional perspective or from the energy is lighter. Energy that's lighter is easier to move. So we can look at it, we can look at something physically, we can look at it mentally, we can look at it emotionally, psychologically, but if we look at it just energetically, so just what I was suggesting, what does your masculine energy feel like? The masculine energy within you. Like when I say that right now to myself, even when I say masculine energy, because of where I am right in my experience right now, my masculine energy is a little bit hesitant. It feels like it's a little bit, almost like a little bit vulnerable. You know, it's like it's trying to back up a little bit. And so if I ask, okay, well, what's my feminine energy like? So my feminine energy might have a color or might have, and in my case right now, if I was to ask myself that, my feminine energy is almost like sitting and waiting. It's curious. It's waiting. And so what happens if I put both of those energies face to face? What if I ask them to have a conversation? Or what if I just, put them in the same place? So what happens with those kinds of energies? If one aspect of me is waiting and another aspect of me is kind of pulled back a little bit, then it makes sense that not a lot's going on, right? it's like we've got two aspects of me that are both waiting or both backed up.
We'll come back to this, Susie. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with speaker, author, and teacher Susie Miller about the latest headlines relating to sex, lies, abuse, and the unprecedented opportunity for healing that is now available to us. We'll be back with more after this break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Susie Miller, you were talking about masculine and feminine energy and recognizing that dance within us. Is there anything you want to add to that? I mean, was it finished, or is there more that you want to say before we move on?
Well, I just think that once we recognize what the masculine and feminine energy within us is doing, then obviously the next opportunity is to invite a dialogue, or invite, ask those questions. What does that masculine energy need in order to merge with the feminine? What does the feminine need to merge with the masculine? And, I think so often, like I say, we're taught to look externally for these answers, and we're taught to, I've been through my own levels of, looking at this information psychologically and neurologically and, what it does to the body and all that kind of stuff. But what I want to suggest here is that if we go into those more subtle realms, and if we go internal and have that dialogue internally, individuals might be very surprised at what starts manifesting around them, what starts actually showing up to reflect what they're doing internally. And I also think it's a really wonderful way to empower somebody who has been through that kind of experience, because like I said, somebody who's been through that has a tendency to be looking for validation and looking for love and that kind of experience from an external source. So this little exercise kind of brings it home that, we do have the power to recreate ourselves, and it starts with our awareness of the masculine and feminine energy within us.
You said something to me in a conversation about our ability to heal is directly related to the degree to which we can allow ourselves to be with our experiences rather than project them onto others. You kind of alluded to this earlier in the show as well. I think now's a good time for you to expand on that, because that can, some people might react negatively to that statement.
And I've honestly reacted negatively to that statement myself several times, because I think any time where anybody feels like they have been quote unquote victimized, it's a natural human tendency to project that energy out and, place blame somewhere else. And like I say, I'm not saying that it's not good to have individuals become very aware of what they've done and the pain that that's actually created. So it's not from that standpoint that I'm saying this, but what I think becomes a missed opportunity, I guess is the best way to say it, is if we have been victimized in one way or another, we perceive that we've been victimized in one way or another, and then we turn around and project that energy out onto somebody else, or kind of, point the finger in that direction, what ends up happening is we actually move all of our energy and all of our empowerment, and we actually kind of give it back to the same individual that created the, that was a perpetrator in the first place, So there's a great book that I love, 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 called The Presence Process by Michael Brown. And I think it's an amazing process and an amazing book, because what he really invites us to do is to be present with and feel all of the experiences that arise within us. So, when we're angry, when we're frustrated, when we're scared, when somebody in our outer landscape really triggers us, into a deep emotional pattern, that trigger is really meant to inform us of something. That trigger is actually meant to help empower us. But if we project because of that trigger and just kind of, if we just move all of that energy in the direction of the trigger, then we've lost the opportunity to integrate that particular experience. So what he suggests, and what I've used through all kinds of different processes that I've offered as well, is this invitation to, okay, somebody triggers you, and it could be a really big trigger, and the opportunity is to sit in that experience and actually feel into that experience, actually breathe into that experience. Let that experience inform you of what you know about it. And again, from an internal source, not because somebody externally is saying, well, this is what that meant, right? Much more empowering to anybody to get information directly from the feelings, the experiences, the awarenesses that they're having internally. That actually rebuilds a trust in self. That to me, that methodology is much more empowering than that projection. So, and people don't like to hear that. You're right.
Yeah. Well, yes, because it's not my fault. We want to think that, we protect ourselves, we defend ourselves. It seems to be a natural reaction.
Right, and I think that's an interesting comment too. It's not my fault. So the very idea that there's even a perception that there is a fault.
Yes.
Right? That denotes shame and guilt, right? Mm-hmm. It's not my fault. I've got to project it out. But what happens if we look at these kinds of, we look at this like we could look at everything, which is, this is an experience. And this experience is very uncomfortable, and it brings up all kinds of insecurities, and it brings up all kinds of anger and rage and fear and all that. And it's an experience. And as we become present with that experience and as we feel into that experience, we can be actually empowered by the experience. The minute we end up projecting it, then we end up losing some of that power. And I'm not saying that, initially, you just want to feel what you want to feel, right? You just want to, and so I think very often that initial experience is one of projection. Nothing to condemn there at all. But if we stay in that projection, then what ends up happening is we never actually get the real awareness and the real benefit of whatever that energy is that's arising.
You have, 17 years now, you've been working with the higher consciousness of thousands of energetically sensitive kids. Your, work, your life's work, I guess you could call it, is predicated on that connection, the information, what you've learned from that, your work with awesomeism in transforming the perceptions of autism, your work with the journey back to love, which is helping people who feel that, they've been wounded in their childhood or who have been abused in some way or that they're broken in some way, to come back to a place of love. What is the most important thing that you have learned from the higher consciousness of these children?
I guess I would say that, from the moment we get here until the moment we leave, we're given one opportunity after another to love beyond what we thought we could love before. And that loving what we thought we could love before starts with us. It starts with us as the individual. We can begin to look at the thoughts that we think about ourselves, or the feelings that we feel, or the way that we treat the physical body, or any of those. And we can really begin to see our programming just by looking at our thoughts for a moment. Just by, and so, you know, if you stop for a moment and start thinking, you know, just watching your thoughts, a lot of people will watch their thoughts for a couple minutes and then they'll think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm a bad person, or I'm wrong, quote unquote wrong, because those are the thoughts that I'm thinking. Well, what if we kind of stopped for a minute, heard our thoughts, and then became aware of, oh, that's what I've been programmed with. That's what that first 7 years of life programmed me to believe, programmed me to be connected to or in resonance with. And what if in the moment we heard it, we simply chose to think a different thought? We simply chose to kind of, you know, oh, okay, that's what I've been programmed with. So there's no fault. There's no guilt. There's no shame. Right?
Susie Miller, I am going to have to stop you there. I'm really sorry. But however, I really do think it's important to end on those words. There's no guilt. You know, there's no shame. I'd love to discuss this more, but we are completely out of time. So I'm going to have to say goodbye and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
For more information on Susie Miller's work and her journey back to love and awesomeism programs, visit susiemiller.com. While you're there, check out her monthly energy balance and integration sessions. If you want to learn to love yourself, that's a great place to start. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I hope